The flower known as baby's breath may be a lovely touch to a bridal bouquet or a vase of long-stemmed roses. But when scientists and researchers see baby's breath flourishing on coastal sand dunes, they shudder. That's because baby's breath is a poster child for invasive plants that can wreck the ecosystem. Charlene Partridge is an assistant professor at the Annis Water Resources Institute at Grand Valley State. She recently did a study trip about baby's breath and its wily DNA. Welcome.
Good to be here. Thank you.
Why is baby breath so bad for coastal dunes?
Well, specifically in the coastal dune system, what happens is it is a very good proliferator. So for each plant, it produces roughly 14,000 seeds.
Well.
right. And within our greenhouse experiments, we show that they have relatively high germination success. So a lot of the seeds that are actually produced will actually produce baby's breath plants. And so what happens is within the dune system, this plant pretty much crowds out native species because for the native species, they produce a lot lower number of seeds per plant. Specifically, one of the plants that we're particularly concerned about is pitcher's thistle. So for those plants, each individual one will produce roughly 50 to 200 seeds. And when you compare that to the 14,000 seeds that baby's breath produces, you can just see that over time, baby's breath would pretty much swamp out that area.
And how have we seen baby's breath impact Michigan's dunes?
So what we've seen is in areas where we have higher concentrations of baby's breath or higher densities of baby's breath, we have lower numbers of native species. We also see it taking over habitat for things like piping plovers, the federally threatened birds that nest along the Lake Michigan dune system. So that's pretty much one of the major factors that we're concerned about is how it affects these native animals and flora.
And you took this research road trip with GVSU grad student Sarah Lamar. So where'd you go? What was the mission? And what did you learn about the DNA of baby's breath?
So one of the things that we found roughly last year is we were looking at the population structure of baby's breath along Michigan's dunes. And one thing that we found is that it's really, really weird. So the populations that are around Sleeping Bear and kind of south to Sleeping Bear National Lakeshore are really, really different than the populations that are north of like Traverse City and the Petoskey Dunes area. And we knew that there are populations of baby's breath, particularly in the Pacific Northwest. That's another area where populations have high density and are really concentrated. So we just kind of wanted to see how these populations are connected to one another. So Sarah and I last year took a trip. We specifically were going toward a population in Washington State that we also look at. So we collected plants from Minnesota, North Dakota. We have populations from Iowa and then two populations in Washington State. And interestingly, what we found is that the populations that are in Michigan or in that Petoskey Dunes area are actually genetically more similar to populations in Washington State than they are to populations in Sleeping Bear Dunes.
Huh. Why is that, do you think?
So we think it might just be because of when these populations were initially established. So we know that the populations in Washington established in the late 1920s, and our earliest herbarium records of populations in Petoskey Dunes are from the early 1900s, so around 1915. So we think it may just be that around that time there may have been a limited number of seed distributors. So they all kind of came from the same seed distributor, whereas in Sleeping Bear Dunes, those populations didn't really take off to the late 1940s and 1950s after baby's breath became really popular as a floral bouquet flower. So during that time, you could have had a larger variety of seed distributors to choose from.
Got it. So from the research you're doing, how can that help contribute to the knowledge of how to control the spread of baby's breath? I mean, I'm wondering if what you learn could be put to use by, let's say, the rangers at the Sleeping Bear Dunes.
Right. So one of the things that this data helped us look at is to kind of see how these populations are kind of moving throughout the dune landscape. And that's one of the things that we're working on right now. So we're developing this landscape model to identify pockets of seed dispersal resistance so we can kind of identify corridors of high dispersal that they can use to actually target those locations for management. If you know that a high number of seeds are dispersing through this area, then maybe you need to focus more on that area in terms of your management. And then also understanding how populations are connected. If we know population one and population two has high number of seeds that are dispersing between them, then if you manage population one, you also need to manage population two, or otherwise they'll just pass seeds back and forth to one another. You won't necessarily actually be able to get rid of those populations if they're highly connected.
So more research needed. But a final quick question. What's your advice for backyard gardeners? Would you say steer clear of growing baby's breath?
I would definitely say steer clear of growing baby's breath. It's a little bit different between what you plant in your garden and what you buy. And the baby's breath in the flower shop tends to be harvested before it goes to seed, so that really isn't an issue. But the way this plant can proliferate and grow throughout, especially in our areas where you have sandy soil in the dune system, I would definitely suggest to kind of steer clear from baby's breath and try to focus more on local species.
Charlene Partridge, Assistant Professor at the Annis Water Resources Institute at GVSU. Great talking with you. Thank you for sharing your work with us.
Thank you so much.